patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
We are up early today, buddy. I mean, not on the East Coast. And this is all so that the East Coast of the country, you know, Ontario East, gets this a little bit earlier. We're 2 hours earlier than normal. The dream is, Adam, people see this come up on wherever they get their podcasts and on YouTube, right? And they're like, wow, look at how available this is and how much earlier it is than normal.
Yeah. And then what? Listen to it more. More people see it. Views go up. We're successful. We retire early. Is that the dream?
This is the dream. Exactly.
My dream is kind of that this has no impact at all. And we can go back to 10 a.m. starts instead of 8 a.m. starts.
And not get the worm, because today we've got the worm. Let me tell you, I'm not a morning guy. I've never really been one to get the worm. And now that I have the worm, I don't know if I'm thrilled with it.
It's just a worm.
It's just a worm, right? What's the big deal about this damn worm? Anyways, let's see. And that's another one for the East Coast, right? A little fishing reference. Hey, that's for you, Halifax. Yeah.
Hey, Haligoners.
Okay, hello and welcome.
Haligonians,
to
right?
Haligonians. Not Haligonians. Right. Not Halifaxers, don't you? That's right.
Haligonians. All right, let's just cut that whole thing out. 3, 2, 1, and we're rolling.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We are so happy to be partnered this month with the one and only Left Field Brewing in Toronto. Just 20 minutes from the Rogers Center. Now, what I'm very excited about is that just yesterday they started their first pitch bingo. This is kind of love fun. This. They've got, if you go on their website, right, leftfieldbrewing.ca, I should probably double check that. See, I should have had that highlighted. Anyways, guys, you know how to Google Left Field Brewing, okay?
But they've dropped us as a sponsor.
And they've dropped us as a sponsor, but they've got their bingo card up and it is so cool. They've got like the Bobuchet hair flip, right? And they've got the home plate lady. So we got to wait a week for that one. But if you can actually fill out this bingo card, you can win up to like $150 in beer, the new ice cold beer. They got the ballpark beer, right? About 4.5%. It's a start drinking when the ball game starts kind of beer, right?
Oh yeah.
Without needing to wake up with a headache the next day. So anyways, the bingo card should be a lot of fun. And for all of you listening, if you spend $55 on that Left Field website, okay, at their shop there, and there's all sorts of great beer to be had. If you use the code walkoff, you get a free koozie.
Nothing better than a free koozie.
Cold beer. They go together.
Cold beer, perfectly. Warm hands.
Yeah. Warm hands. Yeah, somebody has to stop that. And that somebody is us here on the walk-off.
Go.
Okay, so we do have a really big show for you today. Recapping the weekend, going over what happened. We are going to dig into Chris Bassitt, him calling his own games, his 8 pitches. Is it too many? Spoiler, yes. We're also going to check in on Bo Bichette's defense. Now, we did tackle this pretty heavily on last night's long toss. However, Adam, you sent me a quote last night from Kevin Barker of the Blair and Barker show that made my eyes kind of pop out. So we'll play that clip and we'll get into what everyone thinks on that. Dalton Varsho's a go-go. He has looked excellent so far in a Blue Jays uniform. We'll touch on what he has done over the weekend. We check in on old friends. Yes, Teoscar, Robbie Ray. We head to Arizona to see what Lourdes and Gabriel Moreno were doing. We see what Raimel Tapia is up to in Boston. Then we're going
Ross Stripling
to
as well.
Ross Stripling as well in San Francisco. Yes.
The San Francisco treat.
Whit Merrifield makes his return to Kansas City today, the first time back for him since he was traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. So we will delve into that, and then we will do a full series preview of this Jays Royals four-game set here for the week. So on that, let's get into it. Chris Bassitt. We heard so much about, number one, the innings he can log and how many pitches he has. He legitimately has 6 to 8 pitches in his repertoire that he is using regularly.
I don't know if I could name 8 different types of pitches. I'm going to try right now because this is going to be entertaining, okay? We got fastball. We got changeup. We got curveball, slider.
You know what?
Cutter.
Let's go back.
Splitter. Okay. Knuckleball? Does he throw a knuckleball?
He doesn't, but that's a pitch. We got to count it.
Circle change? Is that sure. Just a change up?
See, this is the thing, right? This is the thing.
Some of these have to be made up.
Are we counting 4-seam and 2-seam?
And 2-seam. Yeah, that's
right.
Fair.
Like, how does this break down? And my great guess point. Is that, you know, he probably, it's like you said, with the circle change, like, is he throwing 2 chains up? I don't know. All of
does
Chris
he have
Bassitt's
an EFIS
pitches.
Up his sleeve? Please tell me he does.
But this is one thing. Friend of the show and very, very one of the funniest comics in the country, if you ask me. Sean LaComber tweeted at us yesterday, right? And he basically said, it's like a comedian who says they have 4 hours of material, right? It's like, sure you do, but how good is that 4 hours?
That's a great point.
And so that is the question for Chris Bassitt and his 8 pitches. Now, you kind of brought it up while we were texting last night. And that is that he's calling his own game.
He has to. There's no time for him to be shaking off pitches. Right? Yeah. There's no time for Danny Jansen to be out there saying, hey, give me the circle change. No. Okay. Give me the change. No. Yeah. Okay. Nope. Give me the cutter. No. Nope. Give me the knuckleball.
4-seamer? No. 2-seamer?
And it's a pitch count violation. It's so, yeah, that's the thing is he, because of that pitch variety and all those options, he just has to go, this is what I want to do, I guess. I mean, the alternative is just do what you're told, buddy.
Yeah.
I guess. Would be
and maybe that is the solution, because here's the truth of the matter. We always talk about what a difficult art calling a game is and how long it actually takes for a catcher to develop that skill set and to be able to roll with the punches, go with the game flow, and still be able to call the pitches needed at the time. And now all of a sudden with this, with the pitch clock, more and more pitchers are taking that on themselves, right? To save time. But I don't know if this is necessarily what's best for the pitcher, because they are so used to the catchers kind of calling the game, doing the research for them. We watched Alek Manoah just seem incredibly uncomfortable on the mound in his start in that opening day of the season. We also watched him midway through the game try and give it back to Kirky. I know Kirky wound up getting called for a pitch clock violation as he was trying to fumble with the pitch calm to switch it back to him being the one calling the game. So maybe what has to happen is just what you said. Maybe the solution is as simple as just you just do what your catcher says.
Mm-hmm. Talk to him between innings and let him know. Let him know after warm up. Hey,
more communication.
My cutter isn't cutting today. Let's eliminate that. Please don't make me throw that pitch. You know.
No, I don't wish to overblow Chris Bassitt's start yesterday. It is his first start of the season. He did look okay in spring. Are you worried about yesterday? I know we talked about Bassitt on Long Toss, and I know Garth, friend of the show, Garth Yorgi, Long Toss veteran, if you will. He was down. He was down, and he was just like, I haven't seen a pitcher get hit that hard on that many pitches. And even Chris Bassitt came out after the game and was like, they were literally on all 6 of my pitches.
Here's a question for you. Last year, I think it was, Kenta Maeda of the Twins was pitching against the Rays. And this was, I think, covered by Jean Boy, hilariously, of course. But it was a pitch calm situation in which he was calling his own pitches, I believe. But it was being played in the catcher's helmet too loudly in an empty Tampa Bay Tropicana field. So the umpire could hear the pitch comm. The hitters could hear the pitch comm. Nobody said anything, of course, but they were hearing fastball inside.
Yeah.
Right? I just have to wonder if that is happening at all. Like, that's what I don't like about the idea. That's how hard he was hit. And that's what I don't like about even Manoah calling his own pitches, too. Is like, there's a reason that the pitch call goes from, like, is one directional, right? There's a reason that even before pitch comm, other than Zach Greinke, and we'll get to him in a minute, pitchers weren't out there going, hey, I'm throwing the fastball. Hey, I'm throwing the, you know, like, you don't want any chance of the hitter being tipped off. And just the idea of, like, Chris Bassett's going to type his code in, and then Danny Jansen's going to hear it, but hopefully the guy standing 1 foot away doesn't also hear it. Like, you know, we've all been on a bus or a train where the guy or the girl sitting next to you has their AirPods in, but you can hear what they're listening to, right?
You can hear the self-help tape. Yeah.
You can hear that. Don't jump.
you're like, I needed that.
Yeah, I needed that too. Thanks for sharing, right? We all need a little help sometimes.
Just like the hitter needs to know if it's a circle change on the outside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Really saves you the hassle of setting up trash cans and algorithms.
Yes.
You know?
Just... Now, I'll be honest. I don't think that was the scenario, but because at this point...
I don't think so either, but...
But he was hit so hard, and it was like they knew where the pitchers were going to be enough that you were just like, what is happening? Right. So you start to like think stuff exactly like that. I don't know the solution here. All I know is that for now, I am completely fine writing that off, being like, first start of the year, let's move on, let's not overreact here, and let's see what happens in his next start.
Yeah. I mean, performances are relative. It was the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, we didn't just get beat up by the Pirates or the Tigers. You know,
they were Oakland on the road.
Didn't just do it. Yeah, it was a road series. So, I mean, it's early. Everything, especially pitcher related, is so much smaller of a sample size than anything else, right? Like, for any defensive players who have had 20 at bats already, or, you know, 7 fielding opportunities that they've all thrown into the dugout or whatever, right? Whereas like a pitcher, it's like it literally one bad start. It is what it is. We saw Jose Berríos had a bad season opener last year, and he bounced back phenomenally, right? Pitched to well under a 7 ERA. I say with full sarcasm in effect. So Chris Bassett, I mean, the only reason I'm worried about it is because we are really counting on him.
Yes, and that's right. A great
speaking
point.
Of Jose Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi, those are two wild cards, emphasis on the word wild. So if Chris Bassett is not going to be, and again, way too early, yes, but this way is why early. The panic is even creeping into the picture. It's just that we really need a third solid pitcher.
There's already so many question marks in this starting rotation that to add a third question mark does make my heart palpitate a little, like, irregularly, if you will, right? Like, it's not the best scenario you could dream up, that's for sure.
And the whole sales package around Chris Bassett was that he was supposed to be
consistency,
like
an unsexy model of consistency.
Yeah, just a 3.5 to 4 ERA, start to finish. And,
yes.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure it still will be.
And to put things in perspective, okay, he did allow, this is his worst start in like 2 or 3 years. There was not a start his whole time with the Mets last year that looked like this. So I hope that's something we can hang our hat on and just be like, this is an anomaly.
I mean, people who do their homework better than us are going to chime in, though, and say, yeah, but his velocity's down and this is down and these metrics.
His velo is a little down. I mean, he's normally a 93 to 95 guy, and it's been a lot closer to 91 to 93. Of course, that makes a difference. it is the beginning of the season. He does know his routine. He's 34 years old. I personally think that by the end of April, he is going to be fine. His velocity is going to be where it should be. And I truly do believe when it comes to scouting players and doing their research on who they bring in, the Blue Jays normally do a pretty good job of that. Now, I know there's a lot of people who can comment right now about Yusei Kikuchi, but, you know, on the grand scheme of things, for the most part, that tends to be the case. So fingers crossed that that's the case again. We've got a big mailbag coming up tomorrow, and I would love to hear where everyone is at on Chris Bassitt. Is the panic that's being had premature? I like to think it is, but would love to hear what all of you listening think. And we'll get to that tomorrow. Did you have anything to add on Chris Bassitt and him moving forward?
No, I do not. It is a confidence is still right where it was. Frustration is a little elevated, but it's going to have to sort itself out. So I don't know. I'm not going to bet. Even if he pitched exactly like that three more times by the end of April, I'm not going to be panicked. If he has three more bad starts in a row, I am going to be panicked, but I think
we all will. The whole knock fan base will be losing their mind. Yeah.
One day at a time. Let's take it one day at a time. Let's move on from there.
Bo Bichette's defense. Back on Bo's bullshit, buddy.
Okay, so I want to start with this. I'm going to play this. This is from the Blair and Barker podcast. So most people have to be familiar with this. This is one of my favorite podcasts on Sportsnet, from an entertainment standpoint, at least. Kevin Barker is out on Bo Bichette defensively at this point. I'm just going to play this clip rather than me reading the quote. This is from the home opener episode or follow-up to on I guess April 1st, so I'll just play this. Hopefully this is not too loud but not too quiet, and we'll just have a listen to what he says for the next 30 seconds.
Make you wonder too if they can win a World Series with him playing shortstop. Only time will tell, but you said it right yesterday, and I think this is what people need to understand and just say: there is a huge separation between his offense and his defense. It's obvious.
Yeah,
like there's not any more of, well, can he figure it out? It's just, he's an elite hitter, and he is a below average defender. I mean, we just can't sugarcoat it anymore. Like, it is a fact now. So I think.
Strong words.
Can't sugarcoat it anymore. And here's the truth, man. I honestly still believe Bo Bichette can be an average defender at shortstop. But after hearing that from Kevin Barker, it does make me question it, because we always bring this up, dude, right? Yeah, you and I, we watch baseball all the time. We know more than, let's say, the average human on the planet. But there's also 8 billion humans on the planet, and just because we're in the top 50% doesn't mean much. But Kevin Barker, I mean, former major league player, he's been in the game since he was a small child. He definitely knows the game better than we do, and probably has a better eye for when a player's development at a certain state is what it is. So to hear Kevin Barker come out and say that, it is worrisome, because we talked about this a little bit yesterday. If Bo Bichette is not a major league defensive shortstop, and is only going to hinder this team defensively throughout the season, and even worse, come the playoffs, what do you do? We are already almost backed into a corner for 2023. There's almost no options other than continuing to strut Bo Bichette out to that shortstop position. I know there's people that we can all sit here and scream into the ethos, move him to second. But Adam, we have 3 second basemen on this team already.
I mean, everyone is going to just say, move Espinal to shortstop. Espinal is a better defensive shortstop than Bo Bichette. I'm also not confident that that's the case over 162 games.
I mean, I think he probably is, but is
probably he, is not like it's a one because once you make that change, there's no going back.
No, and you're right, Adam. You're right. So let's just say he is a better shortstop. Let's just for now say that he is. And I do believe he is a better defensive shortstop than Bo. Is he better defensively enough that the drop in offense at that position is going to balance out that switch?
I guess if you
move him to second base,
it's no different bat in the lineup. Like it's still, I guess
other,
maybe
other than Espinal's in all the time and Merrifield and Biggio are just bench players.
Sure. So if that's the case, is if we're looking at it from a standpoint of Whit Merrifield is better offensively than Santiago Espinal, so you're going from an infield where, let's just say it, a majority of the time your batting order has Bo Bichette and Whit Merrifield in it, to now, yeah, if there's a drop off from Merrifield to Espinal, because that would be a thing. Bo Bichette is not coming out at second base. Mm-hmm. So there will be a drop off. Can Whit Merrifield play shortstop? Could we just shift that whole merry-go-round at second base? To the other side,
get Kevin in there playing short.
I don't
really
care to see Kevin Biggio playing shortstop. I saw enough of him struggling at third.
I mean, by the way, everyone watching and listening would love to hear your comments. Feel free to drop those because it is a real rock and a hard place spot. And it does feel like a position where the Jays just don't have a lot of options or wiggle room right now. Maybe something can be done at the trade deadline. And listen, this is something that I brought up yesterday on Long Toss. It is early in the season. And it's almost unfair to Bo Bichette because it's so easy. Like, I just don't count almost anyone else's performance to this point. A three-game series, you can literally take any segment throughout the season of a three-game sample size and write it off, right? But for Bo, because these are problems we have seen popping their ugly head up time and time and time again, it's really hard to ignore it. And I know that this is something
It's really hard to justify the small sample size.
It is
label
when there's a large sample size from 2 years past just glaring you in the face, right? And this is something that Garth brought up. And it is frustrating with Bo because it does feel like it's between the ears, right? And I know there's people that will argue that. But you see his range. He gets to balls. It's just he just airmails so many of them.
I genuinely believe at this point in his career, and I thought he was going to take another step forward in terms of his like physical development as he matures into his prime as a grown man. The arm strength isn't there for shortstop. So the throw that we saw him throw away, and I mean, throw any examples you want with Vladdy having to come off the base or stretch for or dive for or whatever. I mean, that's why Vladdy won a gold glove last year, was on the back of Bo Bichette's weak arm, right? Mm-hmm. Highlight reel after highlight reel of Vladdy digging stuff out of the dirt or jumping off base, catching it and tagging the runner running down. But with Bo's arm not being good enough, it just means that in those situations he has to max effort to get the ball there. And when you're throwing with max effort, you sacrifice accuracy. It's just a fact.
It is. And you see it the most when he's throwing across his body, which is when you need the most arm strength. When he's going towards third base and making that turn, that is when you see him airmail ball after ball after ball. And listen, If Bo Bichette is going to repeat the amount of errors he had last year where if he didn't lead the league in errors, he was right there with Tim Anderson of the White Sox. He may have actually surpassed Anderson just because Tim was injured for a bit there. like both of them are probably they're battling it out constantly for who the worst shortstop is defensively. I mean, it was brought up last night on the show too, right? Wander Franco, like there's guys out there that are just not great defensively at shortstop. Now, Wander Franco is a lot younger, and you just know Tampa Bay is going to continue to give him rope there.
Mm-hmm.
When does the rope in Toronto run out? It's not yet.
Well, okay. So I want to look to the Yankees for a comparison because what they did with Gleyber Torres.
Yes, is relevant. Similar.
Brought him up. He made his MLB debut at 21 years old, played like 4 years at shortstop. Could not get it done. The error count was high. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was very comparable to Bo Bichette. And then last year, they moved him to second base, and his errors were like 75% less. Like, mm-hmm. drastic drop, because it's a much easier position being that much closer to first base. So there is that path. The other path that gets bandied about, and Hey Commie brought it up in the chat yesterday, Derek Jeter,
mm-hmm.
below average defensive shortstop, but I would say Derek Jeter had the arm strength.
And I think Derek Jeter was an average shortstop. All the big deal gets brought up about Derek Jeter because he won Gold Glove after Gold Glove, and the defensive metrics nowadays show that that probably shouldn't have been the case. But Derek Jeter was absolutely an average shortstop, maybe even slightly above average defensively. Bo Bichette is not. And that was one of my predictions at the start of the season, was that especially after watching him not make an error all spring, I was like, you know what? Maybe Bo Bichette has it within himself to be an average defensive shortstop. And that's all we need out of Bo. But what we can't have is him constantly giving up base runners and runs from bonehead plays, throwing the ball when he shouldn't, and airmailing things and giving up that extra 90 feet. I have no solutions, but if you are a smarter baseball mind than me, please let us know in the comments. What would you like to see this team do with Bo Bichette?
Yeah, I was really kind of, I guess, counting on him putting on some weight as he grew into his maturity and, you know, add 10% to his arm strength. And I think a lot of these throwing errors go away. But
by the way, to circle back to Gleyber Torres, for those wondering, he went from, I think it was 22 errors at shortstop. When they moved him to second, it went down to 7 errors. So yeah, it was cut like 75% fewer errors. And maybe we watch Bo get to balls. I mean, my goodness, the dude is an athlete. The range he has is incredible. So maybe he would be a very good second baseman. That is a possibility here. I mean, he does have to still have the wherewithal when a play can't be made to hold the ball.
Yeah, also like the midseason transition from shortstop to second base is
not something you want to see. Yeah.
Not just an easy thing that you just take for granted. Like, everything about it is like a ball hit up the middle. You're diving across your body in the complete opposite direction now, right? It is like the read on that is something you want to work out in the off season and spring training, right?
And who knows what the mental side of that switch midseason would do to Bo? Would he still continue to be the offensive juggernaut that we've seen out of him over the last 10 weeks of him playing baseball? You know, like, he was absolutely fire in September. He has started incredibly hot in spring and even has really contributed these first 3 games of the season. But would that switch lower his offensive production? You know, like, it is all tied in together, and it's a lot easier to sell Bo on second base if maybe come the offseason they bring in a legit shortstop and they're like, listen, this is only going to increase your value come free agency. Because the truth is, I don't think that Bo is going to sign long-term with the Blue Jays. And if that's the case, then this organization better be prepared to do what's best for the team as this contention window is open.
Yeah. Okay. So let's end this topic with this.
Yeah.
Do you see the Blue Jays moving Bo off of short this season?
No,
I don't either. I think he's going to get infinity rope this year.
Yes.
And then
I feel the same.
And then November, there's a phone call and they go, look, you had 35 errors, buddy.
Yeah.
We got to put you at second. You could be a gold glove second baseman. You know, you're going to make more money as a gold glove second baseman hitting 330 than you will as a laughable defensive shortstop that hits 330. I don't know if that's true or not, but either way, I think a change has to be made this offseason, and I think it will be. And I don't think it'll happen before then. But again, 3-game sample size, who knows? Maybe he still has single-digit errors by the end of the year. That's still a possibility, right?
It is a possibility. And you know what? To completely throw him under the bus after one series is kind of unfair to the guy. Yeah, and I know.
Shame on you, Kevin Barker.
Yeah. That's where. Yeah. That's right. All right. We will move on to a little bit more of a bright spot in this lineup. Newly acquired Dalton Varsho. Now, Varsho
looking good.
He is looking good. He's been plugged into that cleanup spot in the lineup for this team that desperately needed some competent left-handed bats in that lineup. And he has been just that. He's so far so good, right? 3 hits in 12 plate appearances. He has that couple RBIs, couple runs driven in, scored a couple times. He's looked good on the base path. The real impressive part, though, has been the defense. Has he been as advertised to you, Adam?
I mean, yeah, again, small sample size, but yeah, absolutely. That diving catch that he made chasing that ball down in the wind in center field in St. Louis yesterday. Great, great stuff.
And that was a play you just knew in your heart, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., bless him, would have never made.
Yeah, I don't, him or Teoscar, I don't think. Yeah. There is a special category of talent to be able to run at max effort speed, stretch out to the max and make a diving catch. Like it's one thing to make a diving catch where you're timing it and you're setting it up and you're judging the ball and whatever. And that's a difficult thing itself, but to run out at full tilt and make a cross your body catch like that, tracking a ball down in the wind is. It didn't even look as good as the difficulty of that catch would require, I think, which also, not that like it looked easy, like it looked like a hard catch, but I think that was a much harder catch than it even looked.
So here is a question for you folks listening, the grounds crew. How does everyone feel about Dalton Varsho in that cleanup spot? Personally, I am fine with it. John Schneider came out and did mention in a press conference after, I think it was game 2, that he is going to run with Dalton Varsho in this spot for a little while. He's going to give him some rope here, maybe the month of April. We'll see what happens. I would love to hear from the grounds crew and what you think. Should he be hitting fourth? Should he be in that leadoff spot? We've yet to see him hit a home run, but in Dalton Varsho's defense, we've yet to see a home run from this Toronto Blue Jays team. So kind of tough to throw Dalton under the bus there when there are a bench load of other players that have yet to do the same. Now, I think that home run embargo is going to be broken as they go to Kansas City starting today.
I think that like conventionally the cleanup guy, the number 4 guy is a power guy. I don't think there's much you can say about this Blue Jays lineup that is conventional, though. Like, our top 3 hitters are all cleanup guys.
True.
You know, like, what is the value of a power guy number 4 is, you know, conventionally you're saying, well, we got 3 guys in front of him who are likely to get on base. So we got a guy coming up with ducks on the pond, right? Mm-hmm. But with Vladdy hitting third, like he's your quintessential cleanup guy already, but you have him hitting third for the extra at bats that accumulate over the course of a season. So, I mean, there's going to be potentially 40 times this year where Vladdy just empties the bases anyways. So we'll take that. I like Varsho's speed.
Yes.
Because he sets up nicely for the rest of the lineup behind him. Like I do like the way we had it yesterday with Varsho 4 and then Kirk and Chapman behind him, because
Varsho getting on in that cleanup spot, it really does kind of help a lot with this lineup design when Kirky is hitting behind him, because Kirk is obviously a big candidate to hit into double plays. He just doesn't have the speed. Now, it's not like Kirk is a big ground ball hitter. However, when he does hit it on the ball or on the ground, it is a definite risk if there's a guy on first base. And having a dude like Varsho, who's got that above average speed and that above average base running acumen, is going to eliminate some double plays that we would have seen otherwise, which is nothing but good news.
One more feather in Dalton Varsho's cap is one criticism throughout his career is that he was likely to get platooned versus lefty pitchers. Can't hit lefties. Again, small sample size.
Very small.
The one game that he remained in the lineup against St. Louis, against a lefty, what was it? Jordan Montgomery. Got two hits off of him. That's went right. The other way with it. I mean, looked good. So, small sample size, but I'm happy with it. You know, if he's staying in the lineup versus lefties and he's just going to be a 140-150 game outfielder, he's gonna have to hit lefties from time to time, and I'm glad to see so far it's happening.
Honestly, right? It's been a good start for Varsho, right? First game of the season, he had a sacrifice fly, he had that RBI, he had a hit to keep the lineup rolling there when they were hot. Yes, he didn't have a hit in that second game of the season, but again, in his defense, the only one to have hits in that second game of the season was Kevin Kiermaier. The whole team had two hits in total and both going to KK. So, I mean, to hold Varsho's feet to the fire there is pretty ridiculous. And then he looked really good. Like you said, two hits against his biggest Achilles heel, a lefty pitcher. You got to love to see it.
And at the start of the year, you like to see him getting hits, right? Because, you know, if he starts the year 0-for-14 against lefties, you know, that's how narratives start to get tacked to a guy, right? Like, oh, here we go. It's a lefty pitcher. We better take Varsho out of the lineup because he can't hit these guys. Mm-hmm. So a good start against lefties is going to help his confidence and everything like that. So, yeah, I'm happy with Dalton Varsho. Looks great. No complaints, man. I'm excited to watch him play. Every time he's on the field, on the base path, balls hit to him, I'm putting down my phone and I'm watching. I'm paying attention. So
he's an exciting guy to watch.
Yeah, heard of it.
I'm excited for this topic. Checking in on old friends. Seeing what some of the old Jays are up to. We'll start with a negative. Okay, Robbie Ray just yesterday was put on the IL. The Seattle Mariners ace, I guess you could say. Out of Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray, of course, signed in free agency last year with the Seattle Mariners after winning the Cy Young with the Toronto Blue Jays, right? Well, he has a hip flexor strain, left hip flexor. We did look up what a flexor was, and that's how we know that it is a hip injury.
Yes. I mean,
but six to eight weeks, all the best to Robbie Ray. Hopefully he recovers faster than that. That is a hit to the Seattle Mariners, to say the least.
We don't have to get into the semantics of what is an ace, what is not an ace, but is he their number one guy or is Castillo?
I would say Luis Castillo is at this point.
Well, with Ray on the IL, then yeah, for sure. At this point, that's an easy.
And maybe that was a bad communication on my point. At this point in the timeline, the Seattle Mariners. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do agree. I think Robbie Ray is number two in that rotation. But I mean, it's a flip of the coin. Robbie Ray is an exceptional pitcher.
It's a Manoa Gausman situation.
Truly, truly. So. It's just good news either way, however you want to rank those two for the Seattle Mariners. All the best to Robbie Ray and his recovery. Going to Ross Stripling. Of course, Mr. Stripling kind of, more or less, I think we both agree on the fact he was the savior of the Toronto Blue Jays season last year. Do you feel that's safe to say?
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, definitely buoyed a otherwise could have been ugly starting rotation for sure.
I mean, Hinjin Ryu started the season struggling, and then it turned out that the reason he was struggling was he needed Tommy John surgery. So he was out for the season. Ross Stripling comes out of the bullpen, and literally from the moment he took the ball from Ryu, he was lights out. Finished the season with a below 3 ERA. The dude was just a godsend for a team who saw Jose Berrios, their big stud, the guy they extended there, gave that huge contract to, struggled. Yusei Kikuchi, the new man on campus, comes in and also struggles. So Ross Stripling saved this Toronto Blue Jays team last year. He has struggled throughout the spring with the Giants, but he did get a very well-deserved two-year, $25 million contract with a $5 million signing bonus. So he's making about $15 million a year total there. He kind of bumped himself into that upper echelon of pitching, a guy who's going to make over $10 million a year. So good for him. Now, that first game of the year yesterday with the Giants, he got hit around. Yep.
Against the Yankees. Yankees are decent ball team.
Yankees are...
They got a couple hitters that can put it out of the park.
That's right. The Yankees are a decent team.
Yep.
I think he's going to be fine. However, he's a control pitcher, and he just wasn't hitting his spots. That's the thing, right? Ross Stripling is not a velo guy. If he's missing his spots, he's going to get hit, and that's what happened yesterday. All the best to Ross Stripling in San Francisco, especially being in the National League where we don't need to deal with him. I'm rooting for him.
I think Ross Stripling is going to bounce back and be fine, but I do think that he regresses substantially from the season
from last year.
I think that was a career year for him last year.
Like if Stripling, if old Chicken Strip can go in there in San Francisco and pitch 150 innings at a 4 ERA, I think they're going to be thrilled.
I think so.
And I do think he has it in him to do that.
Sure, I'll give you that.
Okay, let's go to Teoscar Hernandez. Of course, he was the big piece moved from the Toronto Blue Jays to the Seattle Mariners in that Eric Swanson, Adam Macko acquisition. I know it kind of shook the Toronto Blue Jays fan base when it first happened, and now we're kind of all settling into this is the new look of the Blue Jays with Swanson at the back end of that bullpen. So Teoscar has had a very ice cold start to his season with the Seattle Mariners. He hasn't looked like the Teoscar we're all used to seeing. 3 games, incredibly small sample size, and a few caveats to keep in mind. He did go to the WBC with the Dominican team where he only played 1 game. So he maybe didn't get as many at bats as he might've wanted to. Making some excuses for him here, as it's normally the pitchers in spring training that aren't getting enough time, not so much the hitters. But we also are all aware Teoscar can be a hot and cold guy, and if he is cold, it does take some time for him to kind of find his swing again, and that's probably all that's happening. Do I think Teoscar Hernandez is going to regress from what we've seen as a Blue Jay? I kind of do, more so because T-Mobile Park in Seattle is not the hitter-friendly park that he's used to in Rogers. And on top of that, that AL West division, not the hitter-friendly division that the AL East is. But correct. Teoscar is going to provide some power for that Mariners team, some much-needed power. And I think he's going to be a fan favorite by the end of the year, especially if he can get hot at the right time for that team. I wish all the best to Teoscar, just not when he's playing the Jays.
One thing to keep in mind with Teoscar's slow start, and another old friend, Marcus Semien, had a terrible first 2 months in Texas last year. Looked awful. I'm sure Texas Ranger fans were panicked. Didn't hit his first home after hitting, 42?
Yeah.
The Blue Jays the season before. I think he was home run less until like close to the end of May.
But yeah, I think he ended the season, one home run in 2 months or something like that.
Yeah, but he ended the season with 26 home runs on the season, which again, 26 home runs is a good number. But that's a 40 more than home Teoscar run pace, hit last what year. He did in the last 4 months of the season, right? So like you take out that slow start and you give him two more months towards the end once he got going, you know, it's high 30s home run count for so yeah, lots of time for Teoscar to figure it out.
Now we'll visit the other outfielder that the Blue Jays shipped out, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Of course, he is now a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's playing every day in Arizona. Out in left field there, he has 4 hits on the season. He's looking like the Lourdes we all know and we all loved. He's going to be a bit of an adventure out in the outfield. However, he has always been good with a bat, especially when he's hot. And I think we can all, as Blue Jays fans, attest to the fact when Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is hot, he can literally carry a team. Not baseball is all about hot and cold streaks, right? 162 games. So lots of players are streaky. But Lourdes Gurriel Jr. had another level when he was on. And all the best to him in Arizona. He's got 1 year until he's a free agent, and then we'll see what happens there. We'll check in with Gabriel Moreno now. Of course, the Blue Jays top prospect before being moved. Gabriel made the team. He is sharing time behind the plate in Arizona with Jose Herrera. He's probably going to see 2/3 of the time behind the plate is my guess. He's already broken the seal in Arizona and has his first hit. He's got 2 hits on the year. After getting yesterday off, he'll be back behind the dish today for the Diamondbacks. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of development still to go for Gabriel Moreno as a catcher, 22 years old. But again, he's got all of the talent in the world, 5-tool player. He can play a little bit of outfield as well. He can play a little bit of third base. We saw him getting reps there with the Blue Jays. The kid is going to be a star. The Blue Jays moved him out of necessity, trying to bolster that outfield defense. Dalton Varsho, of course, we just talked about him, was the piece coming back. He has looked great for the Blue Jays. And this is one of those trades I really do believe is going to be a win-win for both teams.
I think you're right. I think Moreno is going to be a stud in Arizona. But I would say they're... could be some real growing pains in Arizona. Yes. I think catcher at a major league level is one of the more difficult, intellectually speaking, positions. Mm-hmm. You know, managing the pitching staff, the comfort level with all the different pitchers is a difficult enough transition to make, but to also be doing that into a new organization entirely, mm-hmm. who has great a different point. System. Of the meeting, like the, you know, the pitchers meetings and the schedule and those routines, you know, a lot of new elements for Gabriel Moreno. So if he has a slow start, he's still going to figure it out. But yeah, I think I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't look that impressive for Diamondback fans over the next three months to the season, maybe even.
And I'm really curious about Gabriel Moreno. I'm definitely going to be following his season in 2023. There's a few things I'm going to be keeping an eye on. The dude has a cannon of an arm. Mm-hmm. And with the bigger bases and an already increased running game happening, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays into his game. It might be a real tool in his toolbox that really is going to be highlighted by how much teams are running factor. On the base. Exactly. A separating factor for where he's valued as a catcher. Anything to add on Gabriel Moreno before we move on to Raimel Tapia?
No, I'm excited to talk about Raimel Tapia, actually, believe it or not. So let's get there.
No, me too. You know what? I was really, really happy to see Raimel Tapia make that Boston Red Sox lineup out of spring training. Now, he was signed on a minor league deal in free agency. So the Red Sox didn't even need to roster him. Now, that said, he did have an opt-out where if he didn't make the team, he can be put on waivers. And I think there would have been a team that picked him up as a fourth outfielder. That is the position he is with the Red Sox currently. He's only had one pinch hit at bat so far this season. He's been on the bench all three games, but my guess is that we're going to see him in the outfield in this next series with the Red Sox there. So all the best to Raimel Tapia. Really, honestly, I have no hard feelings to Tapia, right? We were kind of talking about this, Adam, before we hit record. The only problem Raimel Tapia had as a Blue Jay was he played too much.
Yeah, I mean, Randall Grichuk was a borderline fan favorite, right? He was the face of the team during those hard bridge years from the Batista, Encarnacion, Donaldson years into the Bo, Vladdy, Biggio years. So, yeah, to see Tapia replace one of the guys, it was a tough pill to swallow, I think. But he did so good for us last year. Like,
he really did.
Just, I'm looking up his numbers here. What did he hit last year? 265.
Yeah.
Like,
he was an admirable fourth outfielder.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
No complaints with Raimel Tapia. He overachieved so hard for us last year.
No one expected him to play 130 games, and it could have been a lot worse. So, I mean, all the best to him in Boston, all the worst to the Red Sox.
All the worst to the Red Sox. Are you sweating yet after they took 2-3 against the Orioles? Are you?
No, I love it. Let Boston. I hope Boston does exactly what they did last year. And they're just they're in contention for the division right until June. And then they just fall right off the face of the planet. But I did predict that the Red Sox would finish above the Orioles in the division this year. I do think that this Orioles team is going to be a pain in everyone's side. I just think the real big step forward where they're going to be contending for a wild card spot is going to be 2024. I could be wrong, but that's what I feel. They're just such a young team. Okay, let's turn the page here, buddy, and get to this series against Kansas City. Whit Merrifield returning to KC for the first time since the Blue Jays acquired him at last year's trade deadline. The team that drafted him back in 2010, the team that developed him, right? And really, it should be quite a response from those Royals fans. I think that they are going to give him a standing ovation. I think that they're going to be on their feet and they're going to make him feel appreciated. He made his major league debut in 2016, the year after they won the World Series. And honestly, man, he really was like the only bright spot on the Royals for years. He was the one dude where if you went to Kauffman Stadium, you were looking forward to see what Whit did. Two-hit Whit, that's where he got that nickname, was in Kansas City. He was a menace on the base path. Right. He led the league, the American League, in steals 3 years in a row with the Royals. He was a two-time All-Star in Kansas City. I just am excited to see the fans' appreciation of the guy.
Yeah, it'll be a cool moment. I'm sure he's going to start at second base at least the first game.
Yeah, I would say
probably
so.
All four.
I would think all four. I think that John Schneider is almost most certainly going to give him the opportunity to show these Kansas City fans what he can do. My guess is this is going to be an emotional game for the 34-year-old. And really the dream is here, and I think the Jays are really fingers crossed that his return to Kansas City is what kind of kicks this guy into gear in 2023. He's only managed one hit in six plate appearances, but I think he's going to be given some time at second in this series.
I think you're right. Slow start when he came over to Toronto at the end of last season after the trade deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
But finished strong.
He finished very strong. He was a real difference maker in September.
His season total, not season total, his Toronto total from last year in 44 games led to a 281 batting average and OPS plus of 117. So despite the slow start, finished quite strong.
He was a very productive member of this Toronto Blue Jays team by the end of the season, absolutely. So, moving on from Whit Merrifield.
Sticking with Kansas City.
Sticking with Kansas City, big four-game series coming up here for the Blue Jays. Of course, after losing 2 of 3 to St. Louis, a very good Cardinals team, they are going to a mediocre team at best in the Royals, and we are going to see a couple of the big question marks in this Blue Jays starting rotation be put to the test. Jose Berríos, of course, struggled mightily last year and is looking to right the ship that is his career currently. And that's what Blue Jays fans can hope for, is that he returns to those career numbers, those consistent career numbers that everyone in Minnesota was used to. He is going to be lined up against Brady Singer for the Kansas City Royals this year. And then, this game today. And then we see tomorrow, Yusei Kikuchi, the other big question mark in this Blue Jays starting rotation, take the ball against Chris Bubeck in tomorrow's game. Are you excited to see what the Berríos and Kikuchi got up their sleeves here, bud?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
you're like, excitement might not be the word, anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'll be paying close attention to this game. Singer for the Royals. Very good pitcher.
Yes, he is.
3.23 ERA last year and a whip of 1.14. I mean, he's not getting Cy Young votes with those numbers, but
no.
But
he was one of their, he was definitely one of the Royals' best pitchers last year.
Royals have a pitching edge in this game. Mm-hmm. I'll say that, right? I think pretty fairly we'll say that. The rest of this series with Kikuchi versus Bubeck, 5.58 ERA and a whip of 1.7 for Chris Bubeck last year. So you still probably have a pitching edge over Yusei Kikuchi. And then we got Manoah versus Greinke. What a matchup that's
going to
be.
Oh, that is going to be so fun. Old man Greinke and his weirdness is going to be all over that mound, and I can't wait to see it. The Ephus pitch will come out. He'll be doing some sort of weird thing for sure.
It'll be such an entertaining game. But yeah, as far as Berríos goes, I mean, yeah, I just want to see something to
progress.
Give me confidence or
give
hope
me some
or,
progress.
Yeah, steps in the right
give
direction.
Give me some hope. Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just the uncertainty is what scares a guy, right? Mm-hmm. And those are the two biggest question marks in the rotation. So.
And you know what? We kind of touched on it when we were talking Chris Bassitt. After Chris Bassitt's start, I feel like the pressure is maybe a little bit higher on Berríos and Kikuchi to come up here and come up with the win, right? So the things, Kevin Gausman and Jordan Lyles are going to be closing out this four-game series. The things that I would like to see in this series, and feel free to add your own here, Adam, if you have any, I want to see a home run. I need to see this power in this lineup kind of kick into gear here. I would love to see Kikuchi carry on a good spring and show, have a good showing, even if it's 4 or 5 innings, even if he throws too many pitches and walks a couple guys, if he can just dodge bullets and stay out of the fire, that is a success in my mind. And Jose Kikuchi. Now I'm just adding, we're just combining them together here. Yusei Kikuchi. As for Jose Berríos, I would love to see progress from the spring. He had a rough spring. He had a rough WBC showing. If he can allow 3 runs and pitch 5 innings, I will take it to start this year.
Yeah, I think the bats should wake up. I can't. Excuse me, I need another coffee. I can't see us going another 4 games without a single home run. Like that.
No.
Has to come. Yeah, I think this is, the Royals are not a bad team.
No.
The way I feel like in my head, I have them registered as being a bad team.
They're probably a better team than most people give them credit for.
Yeah, they're below average, but they're not, They're not the Athletics. They're not the, like, they're not the Pirates.
Mm-hmm.
And they got some good young kids that, what's that first baseman they got?
Oh, Bobby Witt Jr. is
Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop.
Yeah.
Prado, I think, is the other young guy.
Yes.
It's a good young team on the way up, not to be taken lightly, but man, do I want to, I mean, we did our April predictions a few days ago. I had this as a 4-game sweep for the Blue Jays. I know that's a tall ask.
It's a tall ask. Even 3-1,
on the road is a big ask. Yeah.
I could see this being a split, and I know that would really upset a lot of Blue Jays fans.
I'm going to be bummed out by a 2-2 series.
I would definitely be bummed out, but I could see it happening. My dream here is that we get a win in one of the Barrios or Kikuchi starts, and then Manoah and Gausman take the ball and run with it. That's the dream.
I like it.
Anything to add here before we wrap up?
Just worth noting, Thursday's game is an afternoon game. So
yes,
those midweek afternoon games sometimes sneak up on a guy, but yeah. So there you go.
Okay,
noon,
so
mountain time if you're on the East Coast there.
Before we wrap up, a big thank you to our sponsor, Left Field Brewing. If you're in Toronto and you have yet to try Left Field beer, you really should. It's one of my favorite when I was living there. Leftfieldbrewery.ca. You go to their shop, you spend $55. And then the free koozie is on us. All you got to use is the code WALKOFF. Do that now. If you're thinking, hey, I'm going to definitely buy some Left Field beer, you know, but maybe I'll do it in a week. We would love it if you just do it now. Use that code WALKOFF and get that free koozie, baby. And also, by the way, if you are a member of the Patreon, a free beer on us anytime throughout this 2023 season, all you got to do is hit us up. We'll give you the details you need there. And beer on the walk-off.
That is at the tap room. You have to physically go.
You do need to physically go to Left Field Brewery.
Such a good episode. And then I just totally fizzled us out at the end there. My apologies.
No. This is how we always end our episodes. In a whimper. This is what the ground crew expects of us at this point, Adam.
In like a lion, out like a lamb. That's what they say, right? All right.
Okay. So again, a big thank you to Left Field Brewery and to all of you watching. Obviously, the grounds crew here, the walk-off fans, we really, really appreciate you. If you have yet to hit the like button, please do so. If you have yet to subscribe, please do so.
Billy, hit the like button.
Billy, hit
the
like
button. Tell your brother.
That's my favorite. At Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. You can also join the Discord. We've been getting DMs pretty regularly for that Discord link. Feel free to message us. For those of you out there who don't know what DMing means, that's exactly what it means, right? Is private message, the little mailbox letter thing on all of those platforms we're on. So feel free to reach out. Tomorrow, mailbag. I hope you dropped your comments below because we're going to be getting to a bunch of them. Thank you so much, everybody. Take care and cheers.
Cheers. Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.